chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off the program with two or three short quotes here and little clips. Mikovits, Dr. Mikovits, she was way ahead on this COVID-19. In fact, she worked on the AIDS. The HIV and all that, which go way back with Fauci. So here we go with a couple of 2 to 3 clips here with Dr. Mikovits and Alex. Here we go next.
Correct. But it's been a giant experiment for 40 years, and the experiment they conducted, they knew how to kill the susceptible, you know, the people they intended to kill, the blacks. You know, women, this children, they knew their immune systems. A virus doesn't know your politics, Democrat or Republican. A virus knows your immune system.
You're saying it's race specific.
It's race and gender and even to culture. We know of things like BRCA1, breast cancer 1, is more in the Ashkenazi Jewish population. So we see from the constructed things that people talk about, it doesn't matter if you're in cleavage site, but the synthesis of that RNA, that synthetic RNA, was weaponized to kill the people who had been injured with these shots.
She goes on to say in this next clip that there's so much of our DNA is not actually able to interact. And it protects us, and it's part of the immune system, and it was God-given. And so here's what she has to say about the God-given part of our DNA and our immune system.
But 97% of our messenger RNA, from our DNA to mRNA to protein, 97% of our mRNA is never translated into protein. It's God-given protection of the rest of our genome. God has given us 97% of our mRNA is regulatory, protects us. So you can't inject synthetic RNA, you can't inject monkey RNA, you can't inject anything without our immune saying, uh-uh, that's not me, and my God's given us an immune system to fight it.
So we were battle-hardened before this happened, we were ready.
Yes, we were.
She goes on to say, this is Mikovits with Alex, about forgiveness of self and others, and so forth. She draws upon God's greatest gift of grace, I think. I think was what she's saying. Listen to this. She has some very powerful things to say.
Did they plan that? What do you think is going to happen next?
What I pray happens next is that we, the people, never let this happen again, that we forgive ourselves, forgive each other, and just simply turn back to biblical living, to healing, to love. You know, God is love, and love wins. And that's, they can't do anything. They're over there hoping that we will just say, oh, it was just that.
And we give up our power.
Yeah.
We have the power.
Yeah. That we never give it away again. That we will lose if we think it was just that shot. That's why I mentioned the Bayer-Monsanto religious exemption attestation. They told you the poison was in everything, in every product they make. So they think we'll just keep going to their drugstores and buying their poison. But we won't anymore, because we know all we need, God's given us healing food, no more genetically modified food. No more genetically modified organism. We go back to living, and living in a way that I haven't seen since June 10th, 1980, when I walked in there with the idea to make plants into medicine. We did that then, and we can do it again.
So they're trying to destabilize us to sell us products that control us.
Yeah, to force them on us or to bribe us with beer and cannabis and whatever else they just said there, millions of dollars. We don't need money. We don't live for money. We live for...
Yeah, what did you make of that video? Oh, we'll give you a hamburger. Just take the shot. They admit it doesn't work. They admit it makes you sick. They hope we just forget what they just did for the last 2 years.
You know what I honestly thought? Oh, the hamburger is GMO, so that's an adjuvant to the poison, so it'll kill you quicker. That's what I actually saw when I saw that. Yeah, it's an adjuvant in their shot to kill you quicker. You shouldn't be eating
binary weapon.
You shouldn't be eating that hamburger in the first place. It's not good for you.
So in closing, amazing being here. We got 8 minutes left. What do you want to impart to the audience about what you've been through, what you've seen on the inside?
Well, you know, what I most like to impart, it's been more than a decade. And, you know, there were some really dark times. And all the way through it, you know, I was encouraged by books, by friends, by pastors, staying in the world, that the book of Daniel, we're the best and the brightest. We won't ingest or inject your poison. And we are the best and the brightest. And that's biblical humility. So, you know, again, we've got to all forgive ourselves and repent. Repent means turn 180 degrees all the way around, not 360, not looking for the next quick fix. There are no quick fixes. But when you live that way, you experience all the joy. So I'm just fine. We lost every penny we ever made, and we got it all back. We've got it all back in spades, in love. I don't even know. People just, you know, are just so kind and giving and to us. And that's the answer. That's those sweet nurses and doctors and teachers who stand for your children and take care of your children, who stand in the emergency rooms and sneak ivermectin into the patients and get them home. There are a lot of angels out there. There are far more of us than there are of them. And we can win this thing. But
by the way, I don't just say this. The enemy's scared right now.
They should be because we didn't give up. You fought this longer than I have. For me, I only saw this in 2009. That's you fought it your entire life. I didn't see any of this. I was that stupid kid who thought somehow it was the bad behavior of a gay man or an IV drug user. So, yeah, they should be afraid right now because everyone in this country is working, you know, of that gift we've been given of the United States of America. We're one nation under God, and we're not going to let them divide us. We're not going to let them steer us into hate. We're not going to, you know, take up our guns. Our weapon is the full armor of God. It always has been, and it always will be.
And we are winning. What do you expect the dark side to do now, Dr. Mikovits?
I expect them to attempt to try to put us back in masks or whatever else, play the game of the monkeypox, the cowpox. but it doesn't matter because what I know we will do is say, not again. Not again. They're trying right now to divide us. They're trying right now to get us to hate each other. We just will not go into hate. We're partying. That's the goal. We're showing you love wins. We're living.
You're saying resistance is victory.
Absolutely. Resistance to any kind of division or hate. Resistance not only to a shot, but to any shot.
And they tell us we hate people. No, we love people. And it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how they trick people to do bad things or trick black people to do bad things or white people. But we know that's all manipulation. We love each other.
Absolutely.
And that's what's powerful.
Yeah. And we will not be tricked into hate. We won't be divided.
What's coming up after this is Nurse Ann. She's a anonymous nurse that's appearing on Rensis. And she tells about going back to work after she actually came down with the COVID herself and what it was like to go back to the intensive care ward where people are beginning to experience amyloid doses type of fibers being built up because of misfolding of protein. But this is quite interesting. And then we'll get back to some other clips. Here we go with Nurse Ann.
One-third of the professional healthcare workers in this country, most of which were tied into hospital work, quit rather than take the jab. So the two-thirds that are manning the system now, and whatever others came in, they're all essentially shot up. So they're shedding all the time. You go into a hospital, you're going into a spike factory, basically, and that's not a good thing to do. So anyhow, Nurse Ann has an extraordinary dedication to her profession. She has helped countless human beings at least feel better emotionally in the hospital if she hasn't been able to help them recover. First question, are you seeing people who have been vax-injured recovering and getting back to 100%? I'm talking about injured, like you were. You were injured. You were made sick. But you weren't vaxxed injured. Let's talk about the vaxxed injured. What are you seeing with them?
If they're vaxxed, and they all are, and they're injured, and their injuries range from a gamut of anything, like developing clots to stroking out to having respiratory complications, they're having repeat admissions the hospital. They'll get, for example, they'll have a clot in one of their limbs. They'll go in, they'll have it treated, and then they're home and less than a week, they're probably back and they have more clot formation. And it may be in the same limb or it may be in a different part of their body.
So these clots, are the clots being identified as blood or amyloid clots? Are you hearing anything?
No.
Is anyone talking?
No. This time around, I'm working in a vascular ICU unit.
Uh-huh.
And we get a lot of, this is typical what we see, so now it's vascular surgery. So what we're seeing is people who are developing clots in their limbs and developing into strokes, going into pulmonary embolisms that where they have clots that have traveled and went into their lungs. And so what's happening is the readmissions they were treating this person for the same thing all along, and with no real obvious good results, even though they're been heparinized, which means they're getting anticoagulation therapy, and they've been sent home on anticoagulation therapies. They are still coming into the hospital with clot formation. They're not told what kind of clot it is. They've just been told it's a blood clot. And I do believe the vascular surgeons know exactly what it is. But they're documenting it as a blood clot.
Okay. Go ahead, Erica.
Well, I think we can surmise by now, based on the evidence coming from the embalmers, these are anything but normal. I mean, that they're these proteinaceous amyloid clots, which are resistant to anticoagulants.
I would agree.
Totally.
I would agree. They're
totally.
They're sent home on Eliquist, or they'll be sent home on Lovenox, which is an injection they would give in their abdomen, which would be in the same somewhat category as heparin when they're in the hospitals, but unfortunately, they're still coming back for the same problems and still developing clots, so much to the point that there was one patient who went and saw a hematologist, and she asked him why was she throwing clots. all the time, and he was on heavy doses of anticoagulation. And he turned around and said he could not explain that to her. He had no idea. Now, I don't believe for a second that he has no idea. I really believe he knows what's going on. I believe all the physicians know. And I definitely know the vascular surgeons know, because they're removing them. And if it was truly a blood clot, all you have to do is take it and wash it, and the blood particles would break away. If it's an amyloid clot, that's not breaking away. You can't break that up easily.
Right.
So they know.
Of course they know.
Yes, sure. All right. The idea of amyloid clots, someone goes in and has one or two removed, and as you pointed out correctly, they're growing, God only knows how many, elsewhere. How many other microclots that are amyloid clots are forming and growing and killing off the cells that those little capillaries where the microclotting occurs in are served. So I don't know what they're going to do except keep coming back to get more and more clots taken out until they get one that's fatal. What
exactly
is their future? Is that it?
Well, it's interesting because I had a case, and I thought it was a very interesting case. She was only 63 years of age, and I had had her when she now had had femoral popliteal bypass, which is basically they're cutting the vein, all the artery all the way down from the groin area to the ankle. And this was after she had her first, apparently she told me she had her first back in April of 2021. And so she started having problems then. And she went and saw a doctor, and they found that she had had a clot, so they put her on anticoagulation therapy. The anticoagulation therapy failed. She ended up coming back into the hospital and had angio done on August of this year. And then four days later, she was back in the ER because she had now had another clot. So a stent had been placed, and now a clot had formed above the stent.
Oh, my.
So now we're fast forward to September, and she's starting to have problems again. And they're basically hitting her with heavy anticoagulation therapies, plus aspirin, and nobody mentions anything about natural substances, by the way, that she could have taken. Nobody mentioned any of that.
Okay, they're dosing her up with pharmacology to dissolve blood clots, when in point of fact, the vast majority of these people complaining of clotting don't have blood clots. Is that correct?
They don't have. That's correct. She's
so that's
clots,
beyond malpractice, isn't it? That's beyond malpractice.
Well,
let's be honest
say
here.
They're
mistreating
them. It's unconscionable because the vascular surgeons are removing these clots, and they know. They've seen this person over and over and over again, and they know for a fact when they pull that clot out, it is not a true blood clot. It truly is something else other than a blood clot, and they're not documenting it as such. So then I went into her chart further because I was curious to see. So the time frames from when all of this started, just so you know, it correlates, by the way, correlates. I couldn't believe the exact correlation. So the correlation was that her problem started back in April of 2021. Her first Pfizer injection was on April 10th of 2021. And subsequently after that, in May 3rd of 2021, she gets her second Pfizer. All her problems start from that, and they have not gotten better. We're in now 2022. And then on December of 2021, she got her third vaccine, Pfizer. That's a booster.
And this was the kicker. On her chart, it says, recommended fourth booster should have been done on March of 2022, followed by another booster in July 9th of 2022. They were basically telling her she was going to be getting a total of five vaccines.
Well, they should have written on her chart the date of burial.
Yeah, I mean, I saw her when now she was stented, then now she had a bypass, and she had failed anticoagulation therapy. There's not much more wiggle room anymore. There's nowhere to go after this. Like, how many stents can you put in a person? How many vessels are you going to open up before you start saying something is wrong here? So I went in and I talked to her and I said, can I ask you, do you ever think about when you got the vaccinations in relation to what happened to you with regard to developing the blood clots? And she's sitting there like mystified. And I said, well, because I took a look at your chart, and I said, your first vaccination was in April of 2021, followed by the second one in May of 2021. Your problems started in April. And I said, because I read your notes. And she's sitting there, and she goes, you know, my friend told me the same thing, but she goes, what would she know?
What would she
know? And I said, I think your friend would know a lot.
I think so. I'm particularly concerned that you, as a senior nurse with over 30 years, are not hearing what these clots are made of. Why are they? Why no. The big secret? I mean, I can answer that, but do you not talk among staff? And does anyone else notice this? That the type of blood clots, which are not blood clots, they're not being described. They're not saying these are all amyloid clots. They're saying nothing.
They're not. They're not saying anything. So just so you know, in this hospital, I've returned to this hospital. I was here once before. And when I was here the first time, we had medical ICU and a surgical ICU, and then we had step downs for both. Now we have a vascular ICU and a vascular step down. So think about that for a second. They've just created another two units.
Whole new industry.
Whole new industry has developed. And the thing about it is there's not enough vascular surgeons to operate on the people
Big
that
shortage.
Are developing the clot. Mm-hmm.
Big shortage, yes. Shortage of vascular surgeons. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
This is really grim. Just keep in mind, dear friends, they're hiding the fact that these clots are in almost every case not blood clots. They're amyloid protein clots caused by the spike protein, making proteins misfold, and they stick together in little fibrils, and they grow into larger strands, and ultimately they fill the space up that they're in, side to side, top to bottom. So they go in and they pull the clot out. The patient is sent home with the wrong medications. Actually, there are no medications that I know of to dissolve amyloid clots anyhow, but they're being treated with heparin and so forth for blood clots. The negligence and incompetence, knowing incompetence, is sky high in these hospitals. This is a lie and a fraud of the first magnitude.
I would agree. I'd agree. And the other thing is a big shocker, because I personally went through this myself, was you look on the patient's charts now, and they're not doing the D-dimer test.
They don't work. They gave it up.
Yeah.
How funny. You know what's really funny, though, Maria? Excuse me. I'm sorry to interrupt. But what's funny is they're always after money and giving tests to people who don't really need the tests in many cases. And yet they're giving up the D-dimer when they could charge for that. They could go ahead and give it to people, but they know it's going to come back negative, negative, negative. So I guess they just don't want to be bothered.
Yes, that was very interesting. Nurse Ann has had over 30 years experience in nursing, and much of it has been in intensive care wards. So she's someone to listen to and really very carefully take her advice. And she's I've listened to her now for about a year. She comes on especially on Rinses about once every few weeks or so. But I've listened to her now for about six times, and she's really an honest person, an authentic person, and she does come across with correct information. And so this is no BS, you know what I mean, from her. We've got about 8 minutes coming up it's about 14 minutes coming up of Mike Adams and his ideas on the North Stream. He's saying that it was not it was not Putin. It was probably us that did it. And he's saying that there have been pronouncements by this administration that we just got to stop that Nord Stream, that both gas line going into Germany there. So here we go with Mike Adams.
But I'll keep you posted about that effort. Now, getting to Nord Stream, the Nord Stream pipelines, the sabotage that took place to blow up both the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines. In fact, I think there were three explosions. So a couple segments of Nord Stream 2 were severely damaged, well, blown up. And these are big, thick steel pipes that are surrounded by, I think, 12 centimeters of concrete. So these aren't small little tubes or anything. I mean, you have to use a lot of explosives. And it was estimated by, I think, NATO has now estimated that there were 500 kilos. Was it 500 kilos of explosives? Yeah. Yeah, that's what they estimate. That seems like a lot. Anyway, wow, 500 kilograms of explosives of TNT, or at least the equivalent of that, is what they said was used to blow up these pipelines. And so now a lot of official sources, including NATO, are saying, yes, this was sabotage, and we're going to, you know, severely punish whoever's responsible for this. Well, wait till they find out it was the United States. By the way, that should be interesting. That cover-up is going to be more epic than 9/11. Trust me on that point. But at least the officials in Europe are realizing that this could only have been carried out by a state actor. In other words, there's a very high degree of technical expertise that is required to engage in those kinds of deep sea operations, to plant explosives, and to also understand the physics of explosives and how do you blow up, you know, big thick concrete and steel pipes underwater. And, you know, underwater demolition is a whole different deal than above ground demolitions because of the physics of water and also the lack of compressibility of water, by the way. So explosive charges actually ripple through water more efficiently than the way they ripple through air. Just an interesting little physics factoid for you there. But you got to have expertise in order to pull this off. So this wasn't just a bunch of fishermen with some, you know, fireworks or M80s or a couple of sticks of dynamite. This is a state-level operation. Somebody knew what they were doing. Somebody had probably, you know, unmanned underwater drones or deep dive mini submarines of some kind, or this could have even been done with a regular human dive, because I believe the depth in these areas, at least what I read, was it was around 90 meters. That's diveable, folks, by certain, you know, specially trained people. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but I'm actually certified as a diver. I was certified in Australia under the PADI system, P-A-D-I. That's, you know, scuba diving and everything. And so I'm certified to dive 20 meters. That's kind of your beginner level deep sea diving type of course. And, you know, certification. It was multiple days of training that I went through when I was in Australia in order to do that kind of thing. And I actually, one time I went down 20 meters, just one time, to see what it looked like from there, like looking up. And it was a little bit terrifying at that moment back then. I probably wouldn't be as afraid of it today, but it was freaky. It's like, whoa, you are really deep here. And you're talking about six stories of water above you. And of course, I did not stay at that depth very long, because I didn't want to deal with the bends coming up. You know, the longer you spend down there, the more carbon dioxide you get in solution in your blood. Obviously, is all the physics and chemistry of deep sea diving that I'm not going to get into here. But in order even to just get entry level diving certification, you got to go through the physics courses and understand how all this stuff works. And so the more time you spend at depth, then you either have to go through a decompression chamber, or you have to come up, you have to surface very, very slowly, which means you got to monitor how much oxygen you have left in your tanks. Cause if you run out of oxygen and you haven't surfaced yet, then obviously you're in a world of hurt. So my point is that yes, the United States Navy has divers that can dive to a depth of 90 meters. In fact, they can probably go a lot deeper than that. It is well within the reach of U.S. Navy, you know, military divers, okay? They can pull that off. I'm not saying that they didn't use an unmanned vehicle or a submarine or even some other, I don't know, remote system, but they could have done it. There are people who can do that. And by the way, there are also people who do that in the oil industry. Who do you think dives down underneath the deep oil rigs in the Gulf Coast and welds the repairs of whatever stuff is broken underneath the water? You know, there's a job that pays a lot and is also very high risk. You get stuck in one of those containers or vessels or something at depth, and you are in a real emergency, by the way. So, again, highly skilled, highly capable, mostly men who do that job. But it can be done. The point is that it was a state-level actor. And that means that it's a pretty short list of who could have done this. So if you're asking the question, oh, who blew up Nord Stream? Well, is Russia technically capable of doing it? Yes, they are technically capable because they also have deep-sea diving capabilities and you know, a lot of technology and so on, and knowledge of explosives. Is the United States capable of doing it? Absolutely. The U.S. Navy is actually very, very capable. They've got, you know, underwater demolitions teams. Would Ukraine be capable of doing it? I doubt it. I don't think that Ukraine has the naval expertise or even the diving expertise. I'm very skeptical of the idea that Ukraine could do this. Could Germany do it? Probably. I would imagine somebody, there's probably enough German soldiers who have been trained in undersea operations, they probably could have carried it out. But why would they? Right? Why would Germany blow up the pipeline that provides gas to Germany? And at the same time, why would Russia blow up the gas pipeline that would provide a lot of money to Russia? I mean, and also Russia owns the pipeline. Why would they blow up their own pipeline? What about Poland? Well, Poland has this other pipeline that's about to open up, I think, in a few weeks or maybe next week, that is going to bring Poland quite a bit of natural gas. It's a Nordic pipeline. So would Poland want to blow up the Russian pipeline? Well, I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't seem like, why would you? Why would you bother? I mean, you're getting your own gas pipeline coming in, so why do you need to blow up the Russian pipeline? It's not even, there's no gas coming through it. You know, and Nord Stream 2 never even opened. And Nord Stream 1 has been shut down to 0% flow anyway, so I don't see any advantage to Poland. And what about the UK? Why would they blow it up? I mean, the UK is one of the least affected countries in Europe in terms of actual gas flow from Gazprom. So I don't see any strong incentive for the UK to do this. The incentive rests with the United States, frankly, because the US wants to both weaken Russia and weaken Western Europe at the same time. Blowing up that pipeline accomplishes both tasks. And it's the US actually that has the most capabilities in terms of deep sea diving and underwater demolitions. And it's also the United States that historically has targeted civilian infrastructure in times of war. You know, the U.S. blows up power plants and water treatment centers and hospitals and things like that. Just look at the Middle East. Just look at Iraq and a Desert Storm, all that. Why did 500,000 Iraqis die from U.S. operations there? Because the U.S. Pentagon blew up all the civilian infrastructure. People starved to death and they died. No water, no food, no hospitals, no electricity, power grid down, all of it. Yeah, that's classic U.S., you know, imperialistic wartime, you know, targeting of civilian targets of opportunity. So, yeah, the U.S. has a history of doing this, sadly. Very, very sad that that's what That's the way the U.S. Pentagon wages war. So my question is, if NATO really investigates this, you know, what are they going to do to cover up the evidence that the U.S. pulled this thing off? Or who are they going to find as a scapegoat to try to blame for this? And by the way, some people said, oh, this could be a cyber attack. And I don't agree with that assessment, although it's worth considering. It's just that I don't see any way the cyber attack could pull this off, because there aren't remotely controlled individual valves in every single segment, and there's no way to ignite the gas through the pipes. I mean, it's just cyber attack could do things like maybe stop the gas flow or keep the flow on or maybe control flow rates and things like that. But I don't see that a cyber attack could cause a massive underwater explosion. That doesn't seem likely. This was a detonation with explosives, which means somebody with high capabilities did this, a state actor, in other words. So as more and more evidence is collected on this, such as ship positions and satellite images and archives of satellites, and just looking at timing of what happened, I mean, on one hand, this was a very easy target because there are no video cameras watching under the Baltic Sea. Like, no one got caught on camera because there aren't cameras down there. So it's pretty easy for the U.S. or somebody else to pull this off and get away with it. But there are satellite images of surface vessels. So the question would be, well, were there surface vessels around that time or sometime earlier? I think the best theory is that the United States Navy was running those drills in the middle of June. And they even called them underwater, what was it, mine removal drill teams. It was the U.S. 6th Fleet. I forgot, what was it, like number 68, if that's the right number. It was the 6th Fleet, I know. They were running operations that was written up in one of those war magazines with photos and everything. And we're practicing mine clearing operations with our undersea drones and everything. I think the best explanation is that they set the explosives in June and then they detonated them in September. So until I hear otherwise, to me, Occam's razor, that's the simplest explanation of how this was pulled off. Because if you're the U.S. Navy and you want to blow up these pipelines, you don't want your ships sitting right above those pipelines the day before, because that's too suspicious. You'd want to have some time delay, you know? You don't want to be near the scene of the crime, in other words, when the detonation takes place. You want to be far from there. But they need a cover story. And it's not enough to just blame Russia. The Russians did it! And then just say, Putin did it. Well, where's your proof? Where's your evidence that the Russians did it? I mean, we have evidence that the United States wanted this pipeline blown up. We've got Victoria Nuland promising to make sure the pipeline would be taken offline. We've got Joe Biden promising to take it out on video. We've got Senator Ron Johnson just actually begging Victoria Nuland to say, well, what can we do to make sure it's never operational again? I don't have any video of any Russian officials saying that they want to destroy the pipeline. But we've got video of at least three U.S. officials, or one being a senator, saying that they absolutely want to end that pipeline. So there's the weight of evidence right now. And Joe Biden also had that little smug smirk expression that he does when he thinks he's a big gangster, when he promised, oh, we'll find a way, you know, we'll take it offline, or whatever he said exactly. I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like that. Because he already knew the way they're going to do this is just going to do it by brute force, you know, with guns and explosives and, you know, military means. So we are in a state of war. If NATO ever figures out that the United States did this, what do you think is going to happen? Would the Europeans turn against the U.S.? Would the British government turn? Could this be the breakup of NATO? What would happen then if NATO is broken up, maybe a divorce? You know, what if this leaks out and NATO breaks up? And that means that Europe would not have the protection of the United States if Europe were to be attacked by Russia. And so that would almost incentivize Putin to launch an assault with, you know, his 300,000 plus newly mobilized troops and everything, to push hard, push west across Ukraine and into Germany and Poland and what have you. So there are a lot of scenarios here. None of them look like a de-escalation. Every scenario that I can think of looks like it's just going to get worse. And, you know, shame on the U.S. for doing this. I mean, talk about a provocation. You don't just go blow up civilian pipelines that provide energy and electricity and heat to an entire continent of people as winter is approaching. My God. I just wonder how the U.S. thinks they're going to get away with this forever. You know they blew up TWA Flight 800, by the way. That was a Navy missile exercise that went wrong, and they accidentally shot down this civilian jetliner. You know, TWA 800. At least they weren't doing it on purpose, but they were incompetent. So, you know, the Navy has been covering that up since, what year was that? It was in the 1990s, I think. Been covering that up for a long time. They're going to try to cover up this Nord Stream sabotage for as long as they can, but the truth may leak out even faster than the gas. We'll see. Stay tuned. I'm Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com, and also brighttown.com. Take care.
Mike Adams sounds extreme at times, but he is out there and he does a lot of production. He has his own video, you could say, streaming site also. So he's done a lot. His writing, I think, is more superior to about anything else that he does do, but he does get the word out. And at times he sounds extreme, but then, you know, everybody that was into conspiracies, all of a sudden, they're conspiracy scholars now because this stuff is coming, you know, so true. Well, Alex had an interview today, the 1st of October, 2022, with David Icke, and we're just going to end the program all the next 17 minutes, 52 seconds, with their conversation, because I'm going to put that whole clip up, and not the clip, but I'm going to put the whole program up and embed it on this site so you'll be able to listen to it. And I think Curry is on there in the first part, and then David Icke is on later on. But you'll have both Curry and Icke on this particular embedded stream that I'll put up later. But here we go with David Icke and Alex.
Bizarre video, Pfizer CEO shocks the world, banned out video. We're having a little fun here, and I got David Icke on this emergency Saturday show because I want to cover the wheels coming off. The whole Pfizer COVID hysteria, them admitting it erases your immune system, it kills you, euthanizing the old people, Russia, the pipeline, Elon Musk and his AI robots. So much to talk about with the iconic David Icke, davidicke.com or iconic.com. He has his own channel on band.video. David Icke. David, great to have you here. It's commercial free. We got about 50 minutes with you. I appreciate you coming on with us. I'm going to try to sit back and let you roll here. Love the new studio. Love how you've been fighting back and not giving in to the censorship. So you're quite the icon here. Total trailblazer. Great to have you here with us.
Thanks, mate. I tell you what, it might be a good place to start, you know, with the subject in the intro, because when I came out with all that stuff a long time ago now, decades ago.
30 years ago.
That it's, in the end, what you're looking at is a non-human force manipulating human society. Of course, people thought that was crazy and that was ridiculous and he's crazy and he's mad and all the rest of it. But as it's become more and more obvious, Alex, that what we're looking at is an anti-human agenda in which the very basics of human survival are being very blatantly targeted. More and more and more people are beginning to ask the question, well, maybe if we're looking at this extreme anti-human agenda, maybe there's a non-human force behind it then. Because we're looking at, look at the basics of life, the food, warmth, the atmosphere is being changed. And you are looking at water supplies and access increasingly being targeted. All these different areas of basic human survival are being targeted. And then you look at the human body. which is, as they call it, a biological phenomenon. And then you see these fake vaccines, which they've created this COVID hoax to justify, of course, and they're putting synthetic genetic material into the body, which, as we've seen many, many, many times now, is self-replicating and building nanotechnology systems, which I say are designed to connect the human body, the human brain, to what they call the cloud. And at the same time, the cloud is being created not just by 5G towers and 6G and 7G in the pipeline, but from increasingly from low orbit satellites, vast numbers of them being put up there by Elon Musk, who's supposed to be a man of the people who cares about our freedom of speech. Well, it's funny because creating this cloud and then connecting the human brain to it via nanotechnology is straight off the script of this global cult, as I call it. And this global cult is the same cult that's behind the global destruction of freedom of speech and all the censorship. I think what we need to do a little bit, those that are beginning to see this, is to realize where it's coming from. From where I come from is that this world we call the human world, the so-called physical world that we're interacting with, that's like a movie screen. When it hits the movie screen, if you're sitting in a movie theater, when the film hits the screen, it's a done deal. You're not changing it then. You're changing it from where it's being projected from, where it's coming from. And the reason that the nature of reality, the nature of the true I, is not taught in the schools and the universities, it's not explored by the media, is because we're not meant to know that. Because once we realize the nature of reality, the nature of the I, the nature of who we are, the nature of what this is, the pennies drop on how the whole thing, the whole deal, is being orchestrated. And that's what I go into in my new book just out called The Trap. So first of all, we have to realize, if we're going to grasp this, is what we call the world of the seen is not everything that exists in the space that we're looking at. It's a tiny, tiny, ridiculously tiny band of frequency, which we call visible light. And visible light is a smear, an absolute smear, a fraction of the electromagnetic spectrum. And according to mainstream science, that electromagnetic spectrum within which visible light, the only band we can see, is a tiny part. That spectrum itself is only around 0.005% of what exists in what they call the universe. So we are seeing next to nothing. And to understand that is to grasp how these non-human entities, in the end, this consciousness that's manipulating human society, can do it without us being seen as seeing.
And David, interrupt, as you've been saying for 30 years, since I've read most of your books, haven't read the new one, but I read the first book she wrote 30 years ago that have been proven to be dead on. They don't even want us in the visual light spectrum. They want us in the VR, in the matrix. They want to even get us out of what we can see at this level to be able to totally confuse us. And that's part of the lockdowns they now admit was forcing us into the metaverse.
Yeah. I mean, from where I'm coming from, and, you know, just after the turn of the millennium, I said that this reality is actually a simulation. It's a virtual reality. It's an illusion to confuse us and to hijack our perception of reality. And I said at that time that the limit of this simulation at the level we experience it as the human world because there are other levels of it, which I talk about in the trap, that limit is the speed of light. So the speed of light is not the fastest speed possible, as you know, people like Einstein said. No, no, it's pedestrian compared with what's possible, but it is the limit of this simulation, which is why it appears to be the fastest speed when you're in the simulation. And then in the spring of 2021, Scientific American ran a story, an article by an academic, and he said that he concluded that we live in a simulation and the limit of the simulation is the speed of light. And one of the things I've been saying over the decades is that what we call the laws of physics are actually the coding that's written into the simulation. So when you're creating a virtual reality game, which mimics the reality we're in, you write the codes, you write the rules of the game, the limits of the game, what you can do, what you can't do. And what we call the laws of physics are actually the rules of the simulation, which have been put in there as part of the control system. And what this academic said in Scientific American is that we live in a simulation. Its limit is the speed of light. And he related, and I say quite rightly, the speed of light to processing speed. So if you're writing a virtual reality computer game, then you write the rules. But even though you're doing that, you're still limited by your processing speed, as this article said. And so that's the limit of the simulation. And so this is like a projection. I do explain in the books how it's created, how we actually create it, in fact. But it's the projection. So the question is, where does the projection come from? Where does this, cause you know, if you look at the Matrix movies, Alex, and the symbolism of them, the Neo and Morpheus, etc., they're in the ship. They're outside the Matrix, outside of it. And so what happens is they go into the Matrix with that probe in the back of the neck, actually in the reptilian brain part of the human brain, fun enough. And they go into the Matrix, not with their bodies. They go into them with their minds. And that's what I'm talking about in the trap, about how actually all this is happening in our mind. It's literally a mind game. And where's the mind? Okay. Basically, there's a little bit more to it than this. Yes. But basically a way of putting it really simply is if you can't see it, then it's not in this dimension. And so it's in another dimension. So you can see a brain. Yeah. Okay. There's the brain. Well, therefore, it's in this reality. We'll call it 3D reality. There it is, the brain. But the brain is not the source of consciousness. What it does is process information.
It's the receiver.
Yeah, it's a receiver in that sense. It processes information. Now, the question is, where does that information come from? Because we have this whole concept now, although science denied it right up to quite recently.
I mean, what you said 25 years ago is now accepted mainline science. I read it in Scientific American, everywhere. All the big billionaires, they sound like David Icke now, but they say, oh, we're going to jack into it and create a new reality for you instead of not letting you know that we can break free of this as well. I mean, obviously, yeah, they're not going to bring us into some bigger, better reality. Everything they do is to make the reality smaller and more controlled.
More and more myopia of sense of reality. That's what the metaverse is about. It's about creating a simulation within a simulation. In fact, a simulation within a simulation within a simulation. So you've got the simulation we call the human world. Then you've got the smart grid, which is actually another simulation. And then you've got the metaverse, which is another simulation. So,
and they admit the Internet of Things and the smart grid is a new world. They call it a new dimension they're creating of the machines interfacing and directing us. So it's a prison grid.
Exactly, That's exactly what they're doing, and that's why people should look at Elon Musk and ask, what the heck are you doing? Because almost virtually, no, not virtually. Everything he does and produces is straight off the script of the cult. But I was saying, you know, you've got the brain, so you can see that. That's in this reality, and it's processing information. And this concept of brain placidity, there's a plasticity about the brain in this sense. They believed until relatively recently that once the brain formed, that was it. That was the brain for your life. Now they know very different. They know that the brain changes according to the information it receives. So if you have one source of information, i.e. the cult narrative, let's say, in all its forms, and you never look outside of that for other forms of information and other explanations, your brain, and this is mainstream science now, your brain will process information and all the neurons and the neuron networks will form to process that information.
And let me interrupt you, because you're right. This is mainline science now. Blue light is making little girls go into puberty earlier just from iPads and screens. That's mainline scientific study 2 weeks ago. And they admit that people that watch more TV, that isn't interactive, people that just sit there and vegetate, don't grow the new neuron networks and literally get early onset of Alzheimer's and die early. And they admit young people in South Korea are dying from watching 20 hours of television a day because your body just literally turns off. Bottom line, this stuff is killing us.
A very simple way of doing an analogy for this is, imagine that you had Wi-Fi, which is outside the computer or around us, but you program the computer not to read, decode, process vast amounts of information in Wi-Fi. What you would do, the information would still be there, but it wouldn't be in a form that you could see and interact with, because the computer would not take that Wi-Fi and put it on the screen in the form of words, graphics, moving pictures, and so on. And that's what they're doing with the human brain. They are, because they know about this malleable nature of the brain, they are trying, this is one level of it, they're trying to just let you have one source of information. It's what censorship's all about. So that your brain forms, your neurons and your networks form to process that. And literally, if you're in that mode and it solidifies enough, it doesn't matter what information you receive in other ways, because this is why people look at others, say in the COVID era, and they say, look, why can't they get it? It's so obvious. Well, it's obvious to you because your brain is in a state where it can process that information that sees through the illusion. But if you're stuck in this repetitive, the brain will only decode certain information, which is basically frequencies, then you're literally not going to be able to compute what's actually happening. And this is why they want us only to see the mainstream media, shut off all other media. That's why they're going for you, because they want to control the source of information, because from the information comes our perception. From our perception comes the way the brain wires itself.